Week throughout Lent, we're going to be looking at the Sermon on the Mount in different portions, little by little, as we go through it. And particularly because this is the seminal teaching of Jesus. This is the core of who he's calling his people, his followers, to become. And we started last week with the Beatitudes, this startling representation of where God is, who is blessed with God's presence. Today we continue on in Matthew 5, starting at verse 17. Jesus says this: "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." We're going to break there for a minute. There's more we're going to hear as we make our way through the Sermon on the Mount this morning. But I want to start there. This is how Jesus begins this message to the crowd. Most likely because there are many who are already beginning to mumble and to say, "Who is this new upstart rabbi? Is he a traditionalist? Is he somebody who's going to uphold the laws of God, the ways of God? Or is he some rebel, some radical on the fringes who's going to toss it all out?" I think everybody's wondering, what is he going to say? So I think it's surprising that he says, "I've come not to do away with the law." Maybe some of you thought, by who I've been so far, that meant I was just going to toss it all out. But he said, "That's not me." He says, "In fact, I'm coming to fulfill it. I'm going to raise the bar, actually," Jesus says. And now he goes on to then expound on what does that look like. What does it mean to fulfill the law, to somehow raise this bar higher that already seems high? So he goes on. "Well, you have heard it said." He's going to say that a lot. "You have heard it said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not murder.' And whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you, if you're angry with a brother or sister, you'll be liable to judgment. If you insult a brother or sister, you'll be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you'll be liable to the hell of fire. So when you're offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you'll be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny." So Jesus begins this contrast. "You've heard it said, but I say." Much of it going back to the Mosaic Law, the commandments, and other parts of the law of God that the people have been following for centuries. "You've heard it said, but I say." But he doesn't get rid of it. He makes it something greater. He says, in essence, he says, "Here's the letter of the law, but here I want you to understand the greater intent of the law." And if we think about Jesus and the people that he struggled with the most throughout his time in ministry, it seemed to be the religious authorities, the scribes, the Pharisees, those types, who were living by the letter of the law, who others would look at and say, "Wow, these were right living people." But Jesus always seemed to have trouble with them. Why? Because, of course, he knew their hearts. And he knew that somebody could live by the letter of the law and look on the outside as right or righteous, but have within them this darkness that was totally out of step with God. So what is he really trying to do? He's saying, look, the letter of the law is fine, but you're missing the point. I want to start creating a people who will live by the law because of the interior of their life is in line with it. Dallas Willard's a theologian, a philosopher. He said it this way. He said Jesus was looking to develop a kingdom heart of goodness in people. A heart that deals with full tenderness toward everyone that it deals with. And he didn't see that in the scribes and the Pharisees. What he saw instead was this sort of two-faced life. An outward life that seemed pretty and an inward life that was corrupted and corroded. A few different times in the scriptures we see these encounters he has. One of them he said, you know, you're like people who wash the outside of the cup really well, but you neglect all the gunk inside. That was his concern, that they were disjointed. They could live by the letter on the outside and nobody would know the corruption on the inside. Jesus wants both to be in line in the way of God. The people would develop a kingdom heart of goodness. Now the old Greek word found throughout the scriptures in this is dikaiosune. There it is. Dikaiosune. Didn't know you're going to learn a little Greek this morning. There we go. Dikaiosune. Let's try that out together, shall we? Get our mouths going this morning. Dikaiosune. Perfect. Wow, you guys are good at Greek. Way to go. Nice job. It's a word in its context. It talked about virtue or true inner goodness. See, what Jesus was mostly really about was trying to call people to develop this true inner goodness, this virtue that then would flow out of them. So to help them do that, he begins to raise up these different ways that people have been living and seeing the law and say, no, it's bigger than that. It's not just the don't do this. There's a bigger call here. And so it looks something like this. There's a little chart that's going to come up next. As he goes through moment by moment, situation by situation, he says, look, all right, situation one. There's anger, contempt between you and somebody else. And the old dikaiosune, the old law, the old virtues, said, well, just don't murder the person, okay? Right? Yeah, I know you're mad at him. I know you hate him. I know you got all sorts of issues with so-and-so, with Bob down the street there. He's been a nasty neighbor. Okay, just don't murder him. Seems, you know, okay, good enough. But Jesus says, no, it's bigger than that. He says, my kingdom has come, and my kingdom and my kingdom people's ways are different, is bigger than that. The new dikaiosune, the kingdom way, the kingdom heart, develops in a person so much so that it's not just that they won't murder someone, it's that they actually desire to help, to reconcile the relationship, to make things right once again, so that the cycles of anger and contempt are done with. You have heard it said, but I say. That's what Jesus is up to, trying to develop this kingdom heart. He's giving them a vision of what it is to be kingdom people. And it's a high calling, friends. It certainly is not easy. We get that. But it's the only way that the world will really change. Right? Well, he goes on. Several more examples of what this looks like. You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. We all know that one, right? Yep. But I say to you, everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. Better for you to lose one of your members for your whole body to go into hell. You hear the difference again? The basic The basic law said, well, all right, lust all you want in your mind. You can think all sorts of things. You can fantasize, whatever. Just don't go through with it. But Jesus says, no. We're trying to develop people for whom this doesn't even become an option anymore, because they value the dignity and respect of every other person they see, so much so that they won't make them into some object of their desires. They won't objectify them into something less than human. That's really what happens when lust grows in us. And so Jesus uses this startling image, cut out your eye or your hand. Does he really mean to do that literally? No. Let's just be clear. No. It's a speaker's hyperbole, if you will. Let's get their attention. Say, this is drastic stuff. Pay attention. It takes drastic measures to take care of these struggles, for a kingdom heart to develop. The moment you sense this lust developing within you, he says, deal with it right away. Don't let it grow. It's dangerous stuff. He goes on, he's got more examples throughout, and we're going to pick back up in verse 38. He says, now you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. These are tough words, right? Somebody insults you and injures you. He says, don't react instinctively like we're used to. Don't lash back out. It just continues the cycle over and over of violence. He says, instead, with dignity and respect for self and courage, turn the other cheek and say, do you want to do that again? I could take it. Somebody's suing you in court. They want your shirt. You give them your cloak. It makes you stand naked before the courtroom to embarrass the one who's just sued you for everything you've got, to show their greed. He's painting this picture of a way that we respond that breaks the cycles, changes the ways that people relate to one another. In the ancient world, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that was pretty drastic. Right? Back then, it was pretty common for folks to, once they've been wronged, to respond with vengeful, retributive pain. Sort of mobster style, if you will. You take my cow, I take your cow, your sheep, your crops, your children, right? This ethic of the Old Testament law was pretty good. It said, no, if you've been, somebody's wronged you, then you are owed in equal measure how you've been wronged. But Jesus calls it out, says, no. He says, don't expect to get back what's been wronged you. Instead, react and respond in a way so challenging, so different than the world understands. People will begin to notice and to say, what is going on here? So you can go back to the chart there. So the old way, somebody injures you, insults you, you inflict the same sort of injury. And the new way says, don't harm but help. In fact, do more than is expected. And see if that doesn't change their heart. The ways they're relating and taking advantage of you. And finally, he goes on, you've heard it said, shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. That makes sense. But I say, love your enemies. What? Pray for those who persecute you. What? So that you may be children of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Jesus sets the bar high. Be perfect. Uh-oh. Trouble. Right? Now, a word about this for a second. We have in our sort of Western rational mindset what perfect is. Perfect is unblemished, without fault. I think the word, as he uses it here, is more getting back to that righteousness that surpasses the scribes and the Pharisees he spoke about earlier. Perfection here is in the heart of God, is this continuity between interior life and exterior action. Between a life that loves from the inside out. That's how God is perfect. Love for all, good or evil. He says that's what we're working towards, friend. Kingdom hearts that are growing that way. And so, if you've got an enemy, the old way said, hate the enemy. They're your enemy. That makes sense. The new kingdom heart says, no. Don't hate the enemy. Love and bless your enemy. Wow. This is how his message, Jesus' attempt to grow kingdom heart in people, was so challenging, because it is a lot easier to hate our enemies, right? That comes naturally to me. I don't know about you. Got an enemy? I don't exactly feel great about them. I want to love them and care for them. But that is the kingdom ways. That's going to change things. But does it really change anything? Yeah, it actually does. Story goes, Martin Luther King Jr. was a young preacher in the beginning of the civil rights movement, 1950s. Shortly after the Montgomery bus boycotts had begun, received a phone call threat. It said, get out of town or we'll take care of you. You've got 3 days. 3 days to leave, or else perhaps the worst might happen. Martin Luther King sat up that night, as you can imagine, worried, fearful, anxious. What do I do? His wife, young child. What do I do with this? How do I respond? In his biography, it tells that he actually felt a nudging, a sort of inner voice that night, in the middle of that dark night. What he heard it tell him was, Martin, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth, and I'll be with you. I'll never leave you alone. And as he took that to heart that night, it changed him. It gave him new courage for the movement. So much so that 4 days later, they hadn't left town. There was one move. And as he was preaching, got word, his house had been set on fire. He rushed out with everybody to his house. Found his wife and daughter safe, but there was a mob there. A mob angry, ready to do harm, and rightfully so, wouldn't you say? His house had just been set on fire. But that's not how a kingdom heart responds. It doesn't say, well, they're going to set my house on fire, let's go find their houses and set them on fire. That's how we think, but the kingdom heart says, no, there's a different way. So this is what he said to this crowd, this angry mob ready to do violence. He said, I want you to love your enemies and be good to them. Love them and let them know that you love them. What we are doing is right. What we are doing is just. And God is with us. Go home with this glowing faith. And the crowd was transformed. And they laid down their weapons and they started to sing Amazing Grace. And they hugged and they cried. And they went home peacefully that night. And because of that kind of a response to violence, the civil rights movement moved on and caught the attention of the nation. If they'd have responded with more violence and just began to burn down Montgomery, well, the movement would have been over. But instead, they responded with kingdom hearts, because Martin Luther King had been touched and given the assurance and the certain knowledge that God is with you, Martin. You don't go this alone. I wonder if that's what happened with St. Patrick, too. I see many of you wearing green today, so kudos, well done. His story is pretty remarkable. Somebody captured and enslaved for 6 years as a teen. He escapes, studies, and then goes back to his captors, goes back to those who ill-treated him, who enslaved him. And instead of getting revenge, as is the custom, as would have been easy to do, instead he spoke good news. Why? Because there was this kingdom heart growing in him, because he knew what Christ was calling him to love his enemies. Wow. Friends, that's the only way that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven that Jesus proclaimed will be known in this world. It's if we act and live differently. We respond to violence with compassion. That doesn't mean we do away with justice and the legal courts and all those that are appropriate. But individually, person to person, neighbor to neighbor, we have heard it said, but Jesus says, live with kingdom hearts, friends. Gracious God, we know it is only by the power of your Spirit that kingdom hearts grow in us. And so I pray this morning your Spirit would be at work in each heart here today, growing little by little so that we indeed would become people who could respond as you have called us to turn the other cheek, to love our enemies instead of hate them, to reconcile, work for the good of each. Or give us wisdom and courage as we go forward.